This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
We have about more than 30,000 deaths, auto-related deaths, every year in the United States. And car makers say that a self-driving car can drive better and smarter than a human. So that is why they are investing in this technology.
The glamour of the limousine is undeniable. Who wouldn't want to be shuttled about town without a care in the world? Traffic, parking, sobriety, somebody else's problem. With the introduction of the self-driving car, limo luxury could become pretty commonplace. As with many new technologies, though, self-driving cars bring up myriad sustainability, legal, and ethical questions. These questions notwithstanding, it appears that the self-driving car is coming, and coming soon. The Obama administration recently announced that the U.S. government will be pledging to invest nearly $4 billion in autonomous driving technology over the next decade. Meanwhile, deep-pocketed companies like Google, Toyota, Uber, and General Motors have made their own investments into self-driving vehicles. This week on Sea Change Radio, we learn more about this emerging technology from Reuters transportation technology correspondent Alexandria Sage. We talk about the sustainability angle, of course, and also find out about the technological hurdles, some regulatory implications, and who's lining up for and against. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by my good friend Alexandria Sage. She is the transportation technology correspondent for Reuters News. Alexandria, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to discuss autonomous vehicles with you, or self-driving cars. First, what are they and when can we expect them, if at all, to be on our roads?
Basically, when we're talking about a self-driving car, we're talking about a car that will make all the decisions for you, one that would not need a steering wheel, would not need brakes, would not even need a human driver in the car. What we're seeing now are different transitional steps on the way to that ultimate goal. People have been thinking about autonomous cars for a long time already, and many of the things that you might already have in your car or things that you're already thinking about buying, such as automatic braking or cruise control, which is very ubiquitous now, these are all steps along the chain of building these self-driving cars.
And as you cover this from a business standpoint, what are some of the highlights that kind of underscore the reality that is occurring, that this is really happening? Who are some of the players and what are some of the bellwether signs that this transformational shift is underway?
Well, one of the bellwether signs is just the fact that Silicon Valley now is home to so many of these laboratories where the car makers, from Ford to Toyota to Honda, pretty much every major car maker now has a lab in Silicon Valley where they are sussing out the new technologies, doing R&D on these new technologies, maybe even buying some of these smaller technology companies that are really trying to push the envelope on self-driving cars. So, you know, where you used to think that the center of the car world in the United States was Detroit, now you could argue that an equally valuable asset for these companies is to have a hub here in Silicon Valley, because they all are fighting. It's really an arms race, as somebody described it to me the other day. It's an arms race to get your hands on this technology, which are going to ultimately push these cars into the future.
So from a sustainability standpoint, are we bound to see more cars because of this technology on the road, or less, in your opinion and experts' opinions?
These are all questions that haven't been answered yet, because we're not there yet. You know, there's so much hype about these cars are right around the corner and everybody's going to be driving a self-driving car in the next 5 years. Well, That's not exactly true. It's probably going to take decades, a decade, if not two decades, for these cars to be everywhere. So this is it's a long-term trajectory yet to getting to full adoption of these cars, which means that how society is going to react, it's very difficult to know the answers to some of these sustainability questions. On the one hand, the idea of having a fully autonomous car, such as Google is creating, is that blind people and the disabled and the elderly, all these groups that have been prevented from driving in the past, now can suddenly drive. So presumably, maybe there'll be more cars on the road. But at the same time, you have this whole disruption in the car owning space with companies like Uber and Lyft, and the idea that you don't have to own your own car now. Maybe you can borrow the car for an hour, 2 hours, or the car, the self-driving car, will drive to your home, pick you up, drop you off somewhere, and then drive to someone else's house. So these things, everybody is strategizing about how these things are going to play out, but I don't think there are really any true answers yet.
So is this a disincentive for public transportation in some ways?
I don't know that it necessarily is. I mean, one of the main problems that transportation officials try to solve on the municipal level is this last mile problem, which is I need to drive to the train station or I need to drive to the bus so that the bus only takes you so far and there's limitations. If you had a robust public transportation system that is also augmented with some kind of self-driving mobility service. So, for example, you're on the train and on with an app, you very easily can book your ride home and it works fluidly and together with the public transportation system. This is really what they think is a win-win situation.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to transportation technology correspondent for Reuters News, Alexandria Sage. So we've discussed the suburban and urban piece a little bit of how autonomous vehicles might fit into our transportation solutions in the future. But what about the interstates of our country? I mean, we're still very reliant on truckers and trucks. Is there a future for autonomous vehicles in that industry?
What's interesting is that actually self-driving cars at this point work best on freeways, on highways. Why? Because usually the interstate highway system is better than our municipal roads. And a lot of people think that actually where we're going to see application of this first is in the trucking industry. They already have a technology for sale which involves drafting, which means that a line of trucks can drive closer together and almost like birds flying. It's less wind resistant and it's more efficient. So they're saving on fuel costs, and ultimately it's a cheaper way to drive. How do they do this? Through technology, and it's the trucks talking to each other and laying out a trajectory for everybody. So this is already being developed, and there are already projects that are funded by the federal government on how we can use some of these heavily trafficked corridors, how we can use them for self-driving technology, how will they have to change, if at all, to pave the road for this technology, whether that's signals that are speaking to the trucks and the cars as they pass, or dedicated lanes. I mean, all these questions are being asked right now, but many people think that the first application of this technology will be in the trucking industry, as well as shuttle systems in office parks and campuses and any place where you have a nice controlled environment.
It sounds so futuristic. So let's walk through not only the technology, but the ethical challenges that are bound to arise. I can understand an autonomous fleet out on the roads, but the hybrid model, which inevitably has to occur for this to rise up in a country like America, which has embraced the vehicle so wholeheartedly for the last 100+ years. How do planners think that autonomous vehicles will be able to share the road with human drivers?
Right. That's always the problem. You talk to people and they caution that these cars have to share the road for at least the next 10 years. If you think of the lifetime of a car is usually on average in the United States, it's 11 years. Okay. So that means that starting tomorrow, it's going to be 11 years before you get rid of your car that you just bought and buy your self-driving car if it's ready.
And some people like Václav Smil, who's a futurist and a transportation expert up at University of Calgary, he postulates that it takes 4 to 5 decades for a transportation system to be completely overhauled.
Overhauled, yeah. So when we were talking about the infrastructure issue, one of the ways to enable this technology is to have dedicated lanes where the roads are smooth and the lane markings are pristine so that these cars can use them and really benefit, but no transportation official is going to do something like that because it enables the 1% who are lucky enough to spend the extra money to have some of these self-driving capabilities right now. It's not an equitable solution to transport for everyone.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to transportation technology correspondent for Reuters News, Alexandria Sage. So we know about Google Maps and Apple Maps, but these companies are actually not just interested in it from a mapping situation. They've actually taken the plunge in a financial sense as well, deeper than one might expect with an internet company. Where are some of the sexiest investments from the technology side?
Right. There's a huge, as I mentioned before, there's this big arms race in the industry about these new technologies to get your hands on them. The big sexy topic right now is LIDAR, which uses light waves to bounce off of objects, and then the wave sends back a signal to the car, and the car can, because of those waves, figure out its position on the road. It's not dissimilar to what the human eye does, where your eyes and your ears, all your senses are going to figure out where you are on the road. The car does something similar, and it's using actual cameras for visual. It's using radar. It's using this LIDAR technology. And it's also, in a few years, going to start using these very high-definition 3D maps. Those maps are not ready yet, but when they come around, they will be really an enabler of this technology.
And that will also include, like, potholes in the roads?
Absolutely. Maybe the first car who hits that pothole might actually go over the pothole, but then the connected car will be able to send an alert up to the cloud, and the cloud then will send back to following cars that watch out, there's a pothole up ahead and avoid it. One of the problems with these maps that are yet to come, that are in development, is it's not enough to just have a robust map. You have to make sure that map is constantly updated. And that means lots and lots of data. And that means really quick processing times. So the other element of the technology that's driving all this is more and more powerful chips that can process quicker, that can communicate between all these different sensors. It's becoming really, really software heavy, the inside of a car now. The inside of these self-driving cars these days is mostly software, and there's very little that's hardware left on these cars. One of the reasons why this self-driving cars right now are so expensive to make, and if they were even available for consumers, no consumer would really buy them, is because you have to duplicate all these different sensors. It's not enough to have a camera. You have to have camera and radar, but you also have to have LIDAR. You also need to have the maps. all of these are adding cost, and the car maker has to figure out, you know, how they're going to pay for it and what cost they're going to pay or they're going to pass on to the consumer. And it's no accident that some of these preliminary self-driving functions, these semi-autonomous features that are only available in luxury vehicles right now.
And there are concomitant technologies emerging as well. Like you mentioned, these connected cars, that might be kind of a toe in the water first, where we have cars that have drivers but are connected. Anybody who watches commercials are seeing cars are coming out with Wi-Fi and cloud technologies probably right around the corner. So what does that stage look like?
That's very much part of it. And a connected car is further along on the trajectory.
Is it almost like Waze, that app which allows people to kind of use crowd sharing to talk about the roads? Is that kind
exactly
of the idea?
Similar? And basically what connected car, basically in order for your self-driving car ultimately to be able to take advantage of all this technology, to take advantage of what the car in front of you is learning or the car to the side of you is learning, the cars need to be connected, which means a modem in the car, which is becoming more and more prevalent. And once you start getting a connection, that means you can start communicating with the car from your apartment to find your parking space. You can use different apps. I mean, it's as simple as listening to your music through CarPlay from Apple or Google's Android for Auto, to even more sophisticated situations. So the connected car is part of the journey that takes us to autonomous vehicles.
One of the real issues surrounding autonomous vehicles, and one of the reasons that so many people are pushing for them, is to save lives, to try to reduce accidents. But will they? It seems like there's a host of ethical questions that would have to be solved for a car to be programmed correctly to figure out the type of decisions we all make behind the wheel.
Safety absolutely is a priority for these car makers, and they talk about safety all the time. We have about more than 30,000 deaths, auto-related deaths, every year in the United States. And car makers say that a self-driving car can drive better and smarter than a human. So that is why they are investing in this technology. Now, here's the issue. We have an ethical issue because ultimately that car, just like any human driver, is going to have to make some decisions. If suddenly there is a accident up ahead and you need to swerve, do you swerve to your right or do you swerve to the left? On the right is a little old lady. On the left is a woman with a stroller. Which do you do? And, you know, these are questions that are constantly asked in these forums about self-driving cars and autonomy. And these companies are actually starting to hire ethicists. They are discussing questions like these. I mean, what they will say is, we would like the car to never have to swerve. We would like the braking system to be so robust that that car can just stop on a dime and won't have to go into either the little old lady or the kid. But ultimately, you know that when this technology rolls out, we're going to have a situation where we're going to have some kind of a bad accident and some kind of decision is going to have been made internally by the car, and people are going to second guess that decision. A lot of people say, who are working on this technology, you know, it's not fair for you to second guess these ethical decisions, because yes, there will be an accident, but the overall, we have to remember about the big picture here, which is that if we can reduce, say, 80% or 90% of these deaths every year, we shouldn't think about the few cases where something goes wrong. That's basically their justification. Car makers also say that as they roll out some of these technologies in stages, since they're not really ready yet for full autonomy, even these early stage technologies are still able to drive safer than a human. So they say, why would we when they're facing with regulators, why would you be very conservative in regulating this technology when it is still, even in this infancy stage, where it is still much better than what a human would do?
You can't go on thinking nothing's wrong. Gonna drive you home tonight. Who's gonna pick you up?
Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Alexandria Sage. She's the transportation technology correspondent for Reuters News. It seems like there would be just a host of issues in our litigious society to try to wade through, to almost recraft how we approach the vehicle. I mean, if you're in a vehicle that you own that hits somebody and kills somebody, are you liable? Is the car liable? And who gets sued in that
Absolutely.
Standpoint?
Absolutely. It's a huge can of worms, and nobody has figured it out. And the one thing people can agree on is that regulation is going to be the hardest nut to crack in this story. And we see it here in California, where the California DMV issued in December some draft regulations for the adoption of self-driving cars. And they say that self-driving cars, when they're ready, need to have a steering wheel and a licensed driver in the car. Well, that upset people like Google, which wants to have their little robot cars not have a driver and not have a steering wheel.
Or people with disabilities.
You had a lot of people with disabilities showing up at those meetings and saying, no, this is, if you write the rules this way, this will exclude us. It defeats the purpose, basically. You know, it's like you have this wonderful technology and we're not able to avail ourselves of the best feature of this technology, which is that you don't need a driver. But regulators are understandably walking this fine line between wanting to ensure safety by embracing this technology, but at the same time realizing that, you know, maybe not all the growing pains are not ironed out yet. I said earlier that the technology is in its infancy, and I want to correct myself on that. It actually is not in its infancy. The technology, people say that it's going to be ready probably within 2 years. That's something that Elon Musk of Tesla said recently. People think he's pretty much right on track there. But what's going to take time is the regulation.
And then a security issue could also be one that rears its head, especially when we're talking about the ride-sharing companies like the Lyfts. Lyft and Uber are trying to make multi-passenger rides more ubiquitous. But if there's no driver kind of there as a security buffer, I mean, yes, it'd be nice to have a camera, but I don't know if everyone would feel comfortable with that.
The California DMV seems to be saying that in the short term, we should still have a steering wheel, we should still have a driver, but the need for those will go away as time passes. The other issue here is cybersecurity. We talked about connected cars. Well, anytime there's a connection, that opens the door for hackers.
Somebody was doing a test drive on Wired magazine or something, and some guys went in to demonstrate how it could kind of be hacked, and they were like, all right, guys, this isn't so funny anymore. We're on the highway, and you've taken over the car, just to prove the point of how helpless we could be in a situation that like this.
Yeah.
And then from a political standpoint, I can imagine anything that has the potential to erase jobs can be a real hot button issue. I mean, if you're talking about jobs that are heavily unionized, like if we're going to be producing less cars, are the auto manufacturers union going to be okay with replacing many, many jobs because of the inevitable downsizing of the fleet? Or the truckers, they're a pretty big union.
Yeah.
They're not going to be so pleased by being made redundant. how do you think we're going to see this play out in a political form?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because here in Silicon Valley, you hear about how exciting the technology is and all these advances and safety and everything. But yeah, you have to think about the job issue. And there was a House committee meeting in November of 2013 where you had some car executives talking about autonomous vehicles. And the main question that they got from lawmakers was, how is this going to affect jobs? And the car makers said, well, yes, this is going to be a disruptive technology. It's sure, that's sure, but you have to think about the, you know, the benefits. The benefits being safety, of course, outweighing some of the negatives, which are job losses. Somebody in Los Angeles told me that they envision a shuttle van or a bus, and the driver now becomes sort of a concierge type service. But that's 1%.
And you talked about how this is going to cost money. One way to pass this on to companies is, hey, you won't have to hire as many people.
Exactly. And it's no surprise that Uber, which has had all sorts of problems with its drivers, is investing very highly in this, in technology. Uber definitely thinks that the future is in self-driving cars and has invested heavily in Carnegie Mellon University for research and development about this.
So as somebody who cares about the environment and is covering this issue, do you think that this is something that environmentalists should embrace or be afraid of or just watch kind of unwittingly?
I think that ultimately it seems like it's going to be more of a positive. And part of it is efficiency. If cars can be more efficient and these mobility solutions that we have today, which is using ride-sharing services, sharing cars, if those become more sophisticated, I don't know that we will be buying cars. I mean, I know myself here in San Francisco, I don't have a car because I really don't need to anymore. There's so many mobility solutions, and they're only going to get better and more streamlined as we go forward. The other thing we have to think about here is that the future of these self-driving cars is electric, that these are going to be electric cars. And that goes back to regulation. Will regulators up the ante on electric vehicles and put more regulations in place? Right now, it's a tough time because gasoline prices are so low and car sales are at a high right now in the United States. Consumers really aren't feeling the need to buy an electric vehicle. But maybe down the line, maybe in 5 years, 10 years, or sooner, there'll be more government incentive to buy these vehicles, electric vehicles, and more a regulatory framework that seems to be pointing to autonomous and electric being synonymous almost.
So there is some hope that autonomous vehicles could accelerate the shift to a more sustainable fleet.
Well, Tesla, for example, Tesla, obviously a huge innovator in electric vehicles, they're already experimenting with this semi-autonomous technology. And their Model S now has a program where you do not need your hands on the wheel to drive on the freeway. And it works pretty well. And they're, you know, as I said, Musk says that this fully self-driving technology is going to be ready in about 2 years. So they obviously think that they're working on self-driving and they see a future in electric cars. So I think the two, you know, might actually go hand in hand in the future.
One thing that I think we're sure to see is the American love for driving is going to be challenged and redrawn in many ways. Like just thinking about the motorcycle industry.
Yeah. I mean, that is an argument you hear sometimes. It's like, I like to drive. I don't want to have a car driving for me. I like to drive.
If it becomes more of a standard system, it would seem having these outliers like a Ferrari going twice as fast the speed limit or whatever could kind of put a real wrinkle in the network.
Yeah, exactly.
Alexandria Sage, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. That was fun, Alex. Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Cal Jader, Bobby McFerrin, and The Cars.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.